Islam in daily life. The following program has been prepared by Dr. Syed Al-Nabi. Material well-being is an essential constituent of falah, or the well-being of this life as well as that of the hereafter. Conditions of starvation, pressure of need, and factors that agitate against peace of mind and normal activity of the human body cannot create a climate favorable for the attainment of the life end. Islam does not grudge the importance of the material basis of all human activities. The Prophet once prayed, "Allah, I ask thy refuge from apostasy and poverty." Thereupon a person inquired, "Are the two similar?" The Prophet said, "Yes." "Allah, I ask thy refuge from poverty, scarcity, and ignominy. Allah, I ask thy refuge from hunger, for it is the worst bedfellow." The Prophet advised, "Seek God's refuge from poverty, scarcity, and ignominy." Islam abhors the state of abject poverty in view of the 101 evils that accompany such a state of body and mind. The change from such a state to satisfactory conditions and prosperity is certainly desirable, as implied by the following verses from the Quran. "If you fear poverty, Allah shall preserve you of his bounty, if he will. Allah coineth a similitude, on the one hand, a mere chattel slave who hath control of nothing, and on the other hand, one on whom we have bestowed a fair provision from us, and he spendeth thereof secretly and openly. Are they equal?" True to its basic philosophy, Islamic law regards it an incumbent duty of the individual to maintain his life and safeguard it from the fatal enemies of hunger, thirst, cold and heat, etc. Islamic law regards human life as Allah's right, and as such it must be maintained as his sacred trust, to be given up only at his command. An eminent authority on Islamic jurisprudence writes, "Regarding these duties, they are binding upon every individual. He is required to safeguard his religion in belief and practice, his life by fulfilling the primary needs necessary for existence, his sanity, so as to understand the message of Allah, and his posterity, for leaving his progeny to inhabit this world, and to preserve his property as an aid to maintaining the four things stated above. That it is a duty is proved by the fact that in case of a policy contrary to this, he will be put under legal controls and checked from putting his intentions into practice. Hence, he has got no right of his own in this respect, but is bound by this duty." The Prophet has emphasized one's obligation to earn a livelihood. To strive to earn a livelihood through right means is an obligation after the main duty, prayer. Bread earned by one's own labor is the best of all earnings. Wealth is regarded a positive asset for a good man of the right conduct. The Prophet has said, "Wealth rightly acquired is a good thing for the righteous man." Good is the righteous wealth for the righteous man. The Prophet is reported to have exhorted his followers upon trade, farming, horticulture, animal husbandry, and other forms of productive activities existent in those days. Economic activities pursued in consonance with moral standards and for proper ends were highly respected and were considered as devout and pious as devotional prayers. Says the Prophet, "The honest, truthful Muslim trader shall have his rise with martyrs on the Day of Judgment." The Holy Quran repeatedly stresses the obvious fact that all the natural resources have been created by Allah with a view to providing man with unlimited possibilities of satisfying his wants and thus maintaining his life in a reasonable manner. "And we have given you, mankind, power in the earth, and appointed for you therein a livelihood." Again it says, "He it is who has made earth subservient unto you, so walk in the paths thereof, and eat of his providence. and we have appointed the day for livelihood. Time and again, Islam exhorts man to strive for earning his livelihood and to exert himself in production and exchange of useful goods. The Holy Quran says, "And when prayer is ended, then disperse in the land and seek of Allah's bounty." And others travel in the land in search of Allah's bounty. That Islam encourages productive efforts is a fact beyond all doubt. On occasions, and they are numerous, Islam pronounces productivity almost a duty, strictly speaking, beyond the minimum effort required to maintain life. These activities are regarded only as permissible by Islamic law. But the moment the question of end comes in, and it comes in almost every moment, the position undergoes a change. Improper ends make these activities directed towards them undesirable and often prohibited. Proper ends make them desirable and often obligatory. The immediate ends that Islam regards proper for man's economic activities can be enumerated as follows: fulfillment of one's needs in moderation, meeting family liabilities, provision for future contingencies and for posterity, and social service and contribution to the cause of Allah. All these ends, it must be noted, are not only recognized, but also recommended, and a minimum in each case has been made obligatory. This obligation is not always merely a moral obligation. It can be legally enforced. The fact that Islam exhorts everyone to work is very significant. Its significance lies in the fact that the principle does not seem to fit in the popular notion of religion, nor does it seem to square up with the logical notion of freedom. Such is the nature of Islam, unique and distinguished. And with that, we conclude today's edition of our program, prepared by Dr. Syed Al-Nabi. Islam in daily life.